Hi, I am Kelly Rotring, the host of Your Life as a Story podcast. I will be talking to everyday people in our community who have interesting, unique, and unexpected life stories. Thanks for joining us. Hi, it's me, Kelly. I decided that in today's episode, I was going to share some of my stories and introduce myself and just let people know a little bit about me and why I started the podcast. I did start the podcast because I know so many interesting people who have these stories that would really surprise other people if they knew about it. And I think we would walk through the world with more kindness and empathy and understanding if we knew what other people went through. And my hope is that we actually learn from other people and become less judgmental. And I love podcasts and I wanted a project. So I'd been talking about it for a while and I decided to go for it. So there's definitely a learning curve, learning as I go. David, my husband, is doing my editing. So that's something I still haven't figured out. I would love your feedback. And if you would like to share your story or know somebody that has an interesting story, I would love to have them on as a guest. So I'm Kelly Rotring. A lot of people know me as Rothering because that's how my last name looks. It's my married name. And honestly, that's how I say it to a lot of people because I get tired of correcting it. It drives my husband nuts because even the kids will say Rothering sometimes. But anyway, the correct pronunciation is Rotring. I'm 52 years old, recently moved back to Delaware. I've been married for almost 26 years. I have a 19-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old son. I work full-time for the health department back in Maryland as a community navigator for families that have children with developmental disabilities. And I work part-time in home health as a physical therapist assistant. I've been a PTA for 28 years. I'm also a Reiki master. And I keep myself pretty busy. I like to volunteer when I can. If there's opportunities that come up, I like to do that. And I thought I would share parts of my story. I have quite a few parts that are significant, but for the sake of time, I probably won't delve into them too deeply. I'm going to start with when I met my husband. I met him in 1996. So this is before online dating. This is before cell phones. And I was getting ready to graduate college and I wanted to meet somebody. So I actually placed a personal ad in the Baltimore Sun, you know, good old single white female looking for, you know, male ages. I can't remember what I said, but David was in the Air Force and was recently stationed at Fort Meade, Maryland. And he didn't really know anybody. So he was looking to meet people and he was one of the people that responded to my ad. And I will say that I did go on some pretty horrible dates, but he was not one of them. We started talking on the phone because, like I said, I was getting ready to graduate from college. I was in a friend's wedding and I was pretty busy. So we talked on the phone quite a bit before we actually met in person. I think that really helped a lot. Honestly. And we met at Columbia Mall by the merry-go-round, and the rest is history. We dated for a year before we got engaged, and then we were engaged for a year and got married in 1998. At one point, before we got engaged, he did break up with me, and I said, "You can't break up with me." And he was like, "I can," and I did. And I was like, "But why?" He's like, "Cause you know, you can be kind of mean sometimes." And I was like, "Oh." So I had to do a little thinking. And I was like, you know what? I can appreciate a man that can call me out on my shit and can stand up for himself. And so I was like, all right, I can do better. I can work on myself a little bit. So we did get back together, and the rest is history. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that all the years have been great and wonderful. We've had our many challenges. We've been in therapy. We've been through a lot that would probably break a lot of relationships, but we're still hanging in there. And he still makes me laugh. He's still my favorite person to be with. And we still have fun together. So that's the story of how I met my husband. And when we decided to start a family, I was having a hard time getting pregnant. And I started fertility treatments. And I knew pretty quickly that I was pregnant because I got very sick. My ovaries were very overstimulated with the fertility treatments, and they were like the size of grapefruits. And I found out that I was pregnant with triplets. And I will tell you that when I left that doctor's office, I bawled my eyes out. I was so scared. I was like, how am I going to carry triplets? Fairly early on in the pregnancy, I lost one. And I was told that since it was so early in the pregnancy, the embryo would just reabsorb back into my body. I had a very difficult pregnancy. I was very sick. I bled a lot. And every time I bled, we thought I was having a miscarriage. And I would go to the doctor or to the hospital, and I was still pregnant. I was put out on medical leave pretty early, and it just was a very hard pregnancy. When I was almost 21 weeks pregnant, we had just went to Hopkins for an ultrasound. And at this point, we knew we were having two boys. I was told that everything was on track. Everything looked good. You know, they were growing the appropriate sizes. Everything was fine. Came home and, you know, I was going to take a nap because I was tired. And I hemorrhaged profusely pretty soon after we got home, to the point where David had to call 911 and an ambulance had to take us to the local hospital. And the hospital that they sent us to at this point was not equipped. They didn't have a NICU. I remember them saying, I don't know why they brought her here. We don't have a NICU. We can't handle this. And them telling David, you know, if we have to save your wife or the babies, we're going to save your wife. And me saying, no, I want you to save the babies. And it was just an absolutely horrible experience. They did get me stabilized, and I was sent to, they transferred me to another hospital that had a NICU and was supposedly equipped to take care of me. But pretty soon after arriving, my water broke and I went into preterm labor, and I delivered Davin and Jacob. They both only lived for about 10 minutes each, and they weighed about a pound. Now, also don't forget, this was back in 2000, 2001. So, you know, I know things have changed with the medical system and with medical advances. So I don't know if this had happened today, if they would be alive, or, you know, what would have happened, but unfortunately we lost them. And we knew, we had started talking about adoption during the fertility process. I wasn't one of those women that felt the absolute need to be pregnant. I wanted to be a mom, but I didn't really care how I became a mom. And the doctor had told me that if I wanted to get pregnant again, we could try, but I would automatically be considered a high-risk pregnancy. And that wasn't really something, physically and mentally, the experience was so awful that neither one of us wanted to go through that again or try again. That was a really hard time because, you know, I was postpartum, my milk was coming in, I came home and I was like not pregnant anymore. I didn't have any babies. That was awful. That's when I started having panic attacks. And it was a really rough time. And I just did not want to try again. And David was on board with that. So when we decided we were going to pursue adoption, you also have to decide if you're going to do a domestic adoption or an international adoption. We went to some information sessions on fostering, deciding if we wanted to work with the foster care system. And we decided that we were going to go with an international adoption and we were going to go with adopting from Korea. Now also, things have changed a lot with the adoption process and the adoption system and adopting internationally. So this was also back several years ago. But we liked the Korean adoption system at the time. The children tended to come over younger. They were in foster care homes. You didn't have to travel to Korea. Their medical care was good. So that's, you know, some of the reasons why we chose to go with Korea. And our first son, we adopted in 2002 at 6 months old, Parker. And I will tell you what, that was an amazing experience. Parker was pure joy. He had these dimples. He was the epitome of unconditional love. I never knew that I could love another human being as much as I loved him. And I never knew that I could be loved by another human being as much as I was loved by him. And we were like, this is awesome. Parenthood is great. Let's do this again. So we were like, and adopting is very expensive. We had a friend, a coworker of mine, that offered to hold a fundraiser for us. And she said, you know, we can use that money towards, you know, the expense of our second adoption. I felt a little weird about it, but I was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. So there was a fundraising event and we had a great time. This was in 2004. And on our way home from that fundraising event, we were hit by a drunk driver and, Parker died pretty quickly from a massive head injury. I sustained a head injury myself and I had blacked out. I was unconscious. And unfortunately, David was awake for the whole thing. We were sent to the hospital. I started to come to. And then like once I was in the hospital and had my MRIs and CAT scans and everything, that's when I was told that Parker had passed away. And I will tell you that there is nothing in this world that could prepare you for losing a child. The heartache is just, there's no words for it. And so not only did we lose a child, we had to go through the court system because of the drunk driver and also because at the time, I drove a Dodge Caravan, a minivan, and when we were hit, the seat collapsed back, and that's ultimately how Parker died. And I can't remember who told us, but there was another family whose child had sustained a brain injury from it's called a seat back failure. And we reached out to this family and they told us who their lawyer was. And this group decided to take our case because it was a known malfunction. And Dodge Chrysler, I believe the term they used was it was considered an acceptable loss because it was it was, you know, not common. It was known, but not common. The drunk driver got off pretty easy because they couldn't prove that he was the cause of the death. because of the car issue. So we had to go through the court system, the legal system, while grieving the loss of a child. And that was just horrendous. Not only did we lose all of that, we had a church community that we lost, because that was a shit show. I don't know, that we had gotten really involved in a church and they just didn't know what to do. They did not show up for us. They actually, in today's terms, ghosted us. We did meet with the pastor or the priest a few times, but that was another loss. We lost friends because people don't know what to do, what to say, how to act, how to be around you. Our second adoption was placed on hold because obviously we weren't mentally prepared to bring another child into the house. So there was a lot, just a lot of stuff surrounding that, a lot of pain, a lot of loss. And that was a really, really hard time. So once we started our healing journey and kind of working through it, we did decide to pursue our second adoption. And we adopted our daughter in 2005. She came over to us at 4 months old. She was and still is one of my greatest blessings. I'm a crier, so anybody that knows me knows I'm a crier. She's 19. She's amazing. And she's just a great human being. And she's really brought a lot of joy into my life, into our family's lives. And she's in college. She wants to be a teacher. But she came over at 4 months old. So we decided, hey, we're getting good at this. Let's adopt again. So we did our third adoption in 2007. Our son came over at 8 months old. And we knew pretty quickly that there was something different about him. I don't know how much to share about his story because it is his story to share and I do want to protect his privacy, but, he was, you know, eventually diagnosed with autism and ADHD. He has several other diagnoses. He definitely has, some mental health issues and I've pretty much been fighting for him and advocating for him since, day one, since he's been here, and he's 16 now, will be 17 in June. So that has been exhausting. It's challenging navigating our system for children that have issues that need help has been eye-opening. It's been depressing. It's been exhausting. I won't stop though, because he's going to need ongoing support for the rest of his life. And I want him to be as independent and healthy as he can be. There just aren't enough resources out there. There's not enough help. There's not enough resources. And very few people actually know what we deal with on a daily basis. And it's exhausting. So that's another part of our story. Let's see. Like I said, I've had a lot. I don't know like what to share, how much to go into it. But the purpose of me sharing is just so that people know that, you know, when you're standing next to somebody in the grocery store, in line, drive by somebody's house, you really have no idea what they go through. And I just think about that a lot. In 2019, our daughter became very, very sick. Scary sick. Ended up that she had Lyme disease and a variety of other infections. I could do a whole episode about that experience. I am definitely going to have some people on to talk about Lyme disease because it's very complicated. There's a lot that's not known. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And this is something that's we're still dealing with. I mean, luckily I found, the right treatment for her and the right doctors for her. That was a really hard battle. getting the right diagnosis, finding the right doctors, getting the right treatment. And that was a very horrible and traumatic experience. 2020, I will say that working in healthcare during the COVID pandemic changed a lot of things for me personally. It really made me very confused about humanity, about why people think the way they do, about what people value, and it really made me question a lot. My husband's a nurse, and we were in it. And we saw some really horrible things. And unfortunately, I know quite a few people that work in healthcare that do honestly have PTSD from the things that they saw and that they went through. And I just don't think people realize the gravity, the heaviness, just the fear, the unknown, what that time entailed. Everybody's experience is different. But that was something that definitely changed me. I can't believe I'm actually still working in healthcare, to be honest with you, after experiencing that. Then my husband, David, actually got sick with Lyme disease himself in 2021. He had different symptoms than our daughter did. And we think his was activated from some mold exposure. So David's had some health challenges. And then in 2023, he suffered a traumatic injury to his leg that was unfortunately caused by our son. So that's a whole nother thing. That's a whole nother experience. That's a whole nother set of traumas. That's just a mess. So as you can see, I have been through quite a bit. And obviously these are very significant things that have happened in my life. And I could go into each one a lot deeper. But if any of this resonates with anybody, if anybody wants to talk about it personally or ask questions, I'm pretty much an open book. You can ask me whatever you want. I will answer you to the best of my ability. I do like giving people resources and letting people know what helped or didn't help, especially when it comes to Lyme disease and resources that help with that. Right now, I feel like we're in a decent place. You know, our daughter's in college. Our son's graduating high school this year. My husband's working as a clinical manager, and he's on his own healing journey. I'm plugging along, you know, doing the best I can. Really working on surrounding myself with good, positive people. And, we're doing okay. So even though these horrible things have happened, I do still find joy in my life. That's why I ask people on the podcast. That's one of the questions I ask is, what brings you joy? What brings me joy is when I see my kids happy, when I hear them laugh. Making connections with other people really brings me joy. I don't do surface level stuff real well. I like to go deep. I don't know. I just do. My dog Pixie, anybody that knows me knows that my three-legged dog Pixie brings me a lot of joy. My family. So there are moments of joy, and I want to create more moments of joy. And, I just want to thank you for being on this journey with me, for listening to me share. And like I said, if you have a story that you would like to share or know somebody that has an interesting story, I would love to give them the platform to be able to share. And thanks again. Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Life as a Story podcast. If you could like, subscribe, and share, it would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much.